And this is Detroit Today on WDET, Detroit Public Radio. I'm Craig Folly. Thanks for being with us. And I want to welcome David Bruhan, portfolio manager for Gregory J. Schwartz and Company, also known as David from Bloomfield Hills, occasionally on this program. He's called in a few times to basically challenge my lack of knowledge on the financial institutions of the world. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Craig.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. And, you called up the other day and said, I've got some interesting ideas. And I'll be frank, typical of a lot of callers. I'm like, all right, well, what's this guy's level of expertise that he wants to come on? I did some research and found out it's quite extensive. You've been in this business for a long, long time. And, this could be a pretty wide-ranging conversation on a lot of different things that are going on. But one, the economy, which is what you wanted to focus on, and the approaches to fixing the economy. You were very critical of the way that this is being handled so far, at least on the banking end of things, and what the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department are doing to address the situation right now.
That's correct. I think from a 30,000-foot level, when you look at the macro view, both in the U.S. and globally, because we are globally linked in what we do, the world takes its cue from. What the U.S. government and its various agencies must do is not make the situation worse. And when you look at the philosophy, especially of the Federal Reserve Chairman, Ben Bernanke, who's widely recognized now that Dr. Milton Friedman has died as the expert on the Great Depression, he and other members of the economic group, both in Washington and also academia, take their cue from Friedman's research regarding the money supply in the economy dropping by about 33% from 1929 to 1933.
Mm-hmm.
And this is correct, but it's like starting the alphabet at B rather than A. The market crash in 1929 was actually caused by the Smoot-Hawley tariff that had not yet become law, but was confirmed would become law in the present session of Congress or the next. This began to spiral a global implosion of trade, dropping trade levels from 1929 to 1933 by about 60%. In addition, in 1932, Herbert Hoover came in and raised taxes with the Revenue Act of 1932 upwards of 60 to 80% on an economy already in severe depression. And that's what we have to avoid doing, is both tax increases and an excessive monetary stimulus that will severely weaken our dollar longer term.
And, let's go back. You said point A is this Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act. What would it have done?
Smoot-Hawley was an attempt by especially those in agriculture in 1928, which Hoover was supported by, to impose punitive tariffs on agricultural products that were cheaper than ours coming into the United States. The bill, in its form of passage, raised tariffs on 25,000 goods and services coming into the United States. And on the morning of Monday, October 28, 1929, it was reported in the New York Times and other major papers that the tariff would indeed become law. There was rumors circulating that the tariff would not become law, but Smoot said, look, if this bill does not pass in the present session of Congress, it will go on to pass in the next. The tariff bill cannot die until the Senate says so. And most academicians and politicians don't understand that markets discount future earnings. And you don't need the tariff bill to become law in June of 1930 when the legislators are telling you it's going to become law in October of 1929. The markets will correct because import prices will go up, and that will reduce the ability of a company to manage its budget because they'll be paying much more from what they need. And also, with guaranteed retaliation of our trading partners, those institutions and corporations won't be able to export their goods and services overseas. You have a trade war. Trade benefits everybody, believe it or not. It's difficult for most to understand that. We've only recently become global, having been really insulated from the rest of the world by two oceans and two great neighbors, Canada and Mexico.
Interestingly enough, that discussion right there has wings today. We just had a caller a couple minutes ago suggesting that we put punitive tariffs on foreign automobiles in retaliation for what they deem unfair trade practices in this country.
Absolutely. We have to avoid that because especially now that we're approaching another debt ceiling of $11.315 trillion, and our GDP is about $14 trillion. If you impose any type of tariffs against your trading partners, the easiest thing to be repatriated from the United States is capital or money. And with a click of a mouse, foreigners currently own $2.6 trillion of your federal debt. A lot of people believe that, well, it's not important, the debt we owe to ourselves. No, that's not actually true. We are dependent on China, on Japan, on Saudi Arabia to finance our debt, which is growing by leaps and bounds every day. The fact that the Federal Reserve is physically injecting credit or printing money, as we say in the industry, is only part of the story. You're going to issue tens of billions of dollars of Treasury notes, bonds, and bills that are going to come due at a later date. And currently, the only way to pay for these securities is by issuing more securities. And the folks that are 40 levels deep in finance know this, and your foreigners are only going to put up with this for so long. If the dollar becomes weak again and foreigners end up losing more in principal than we pay them in interest, they will sell their governments and take their money somewhere else and buy gold or somebody else's currency. There's a wide choice in a global economy, and this is not about politics and it's not about economics. This is about finance.
David Bruhan, our guest. He's a portfolio manager with Gregory J. Schwartz and Company Incorporated. We're talking about what is going on in the economy right now and the approaches that the government is taking to address the problems that we have. President Obama, President-elect Obama, the other day suggested maybe it's time to revisit the idea of a public works program, get people working again on infrastructure improvements, take this time, invest money in our infrastructure needs, get people back to work. This is reminiscent for a lot of people to some of the actions taken by FDR in the New Deal. Your take on what President-elect Obama is proposing at this point in time?
The advice I'd give to the incoming administration would be make it possible for those people who are already in the business of hiring others, make it easier for them to hire others. The New Deal has received an enormous amount of scrutiny and is credited with successes, but it actually failed.
In what way?
Roosevelt attempted to replace the normal mechanism of the market. And when you just look at the unemployment data from 1933, unemployment in the United States was 12.8 million. In 1938, it was 10.3 million. Roosevelt increased the national debt by 60%. He could have gone a long way in 1933 when he took office to eliminate the depression by lifting the Smoot-Hawley tariff and reversing the Revenue Act of 1932. But instead, he raised taxes on his own in 1934, 1935, and 1936, began massive public works spending and projects. And when you look at the action of the Standard & Poor's 500 after all of this job creation and money printing that was an artificial stimulus after we went off the gold standard in 1933, the S&P 500 peaked in March of 1937 and dropped 60% until April 1942, when three military operations that were successful actually put a floor on the market in the spring of 42. Jimmy Doolittle's raid on Tokyo, the Battle of the Coral Sea, which was effectively a draw, and our victory at Midway in June of 1942. But it's important to remember that the Dow Jones Industrial Average did not retain or did not cross its level in October or early 1929 until 1954. The market moved sideways for 25 years. So the issue in a fiscal stimulus, in addition to the Federal Reserve injecting a monetary stimulus now with the Obama administration, is you may well put in $700 billion to $1.2 trillion more on public works projects, but where are you going to get the money? They're probably going to borrow it or print it, which is very, very inflationary long term. You have to worry about weakening the currency so your foreigners don't sell your debt. And you're clearly better off with many things that you could do that would make the situation better. by the end of 2010. This market left alone will probably not bottom until 2010. Housing probably has 20% to drop yet in residential. Most people understand that commercial will follow residential, and the autos are going to have to retool, and to make tooling and engineering work, it's probably going to take another 18 months. But there's some very good things that they could put in place, shepherded by some very good people who are well-educated that could help fix this thing.
We have a caller, if that's all right.
Great.
Ann is in Detroit and wanted to chime in. Hi, Ann.
Yes. Hi, gentlemen. I need to get the gentleman's name again.
David. David Bruhan is my guest.
David. Bruhan. Hi, Mr. Bruhan. I am responding to a basic statement that you just made about placing employers in a position of being able to afford to hire employees.
Detroit, Amanda.
Pardon?
Oh, I'm sorry. Amanda, for some reason, came through on there. She picked up the wrong line. Ann, continue on, please.
Well, I am currently having the pleasure of acting on behalf of the Department of Labor for a downtown Department of Labor office with placing employees and environments through an on-the-job training program, which is a fund that we give to employers.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And so I would like to be able to get his information and be able to interact with him further, but I also just wanted to put the word out there to two-man operations up to as far as 50 or whatever. I mean, we're not really chasing corporations, I'll be very honest with you. We're chasing after more Detroit-based and its surrounding suburb medium to small businesses. And we're giving a small shot in the arm of up to 100% reimbursement for them hiring and training people for up to 90 days. Well, it's been working pretty well for me because I'm targeting Detroit and surrounding Detroit communities. And a lot of those companies don't get called upon, which is very unusual. And they're the ones that need the extra help the most.
All right, Ann, thanks very much for the comment. I'm going to let David respond to that in just a second. But in the meantime, we just lost her. I was going to have her stay on hold for a second so Amanda could get her information. But Ann, call us back, and we can get your number so I can pass it on to David. But, you know, again, helping people just match employees to jobs, it seems to be that's part of the problem right now.
Right. And what you have to do is make it possible for the people who are closest to the information, business owners and entrepreneurs, to make good decisions with minimal interference. And the danger is that the government is going to attempt to do too much and too little, both at the same time. One of the biggest impediments to job creation is regulation and taxes. And I know there's a move toward greater regulation because of what's going on in the economy. But one idea that I know has been floated in Washington and is under serious consideration, I think the Bush administration and the Obama administration are working really well in transition. This is one of the times in life where deadlines produce results and you actually have to get something done. So the Democrats and Republicans are working well together. Is the idea that there can be a temporary suspension on the Social Security portion of employee and employer FICA tax. Most employees don't realize that your FICA tax of 6.2 for the Social Security is matched by your employer. And if you use a comparison to the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, Social Security is actually solvent out to about 2020. So what we would do...
That completely flies in the face of what we keep hearing in Congress about Social Security.
Yeah, it's okay for a little while. Although when you look at your statement that you get 2 months before your birthday every year, they do tell you on the front page, and it is in bold, that the number that you currently have out to about year 2042 is only funded by 73% of current assets. So they admit they're going to fix it, or they'll have to, in order for you to get 100% of what you've been promised. But the point is, if we just turned off the Social Security portion of FICA to employees and employers for 6 months, you would give a non-dollar weakening stimulus that would not impact the cumulative national debt, because it's just going up billions a day, and you'd be able to give the economy a shot in the arm. Giving people another $2,000, like we gave them in April, $1,000 that got spent on gas in 45 days, will only weaken the currency. You've got to target the job creators and the entrepreneurs in an economy. When you look at history, what works our system works. Capitalism really is under siege because of all the mistakes that have been made. But in essence, it's the only system in 5,000 years that has given average people the same access to goods and services that had only been available to the rich throughout time.
Now, obviously, credit plays a big role in that for a lot of folks, and the credit markets are just they're frozen for the most part. What can be done in the short term to alleviate that situation? Is it a situation where we have to force the banks to then lend that money that they've been getting from the federal government?
No, this is a great question, and there's several reasons the banks aren't lending. The first reason is that their loans or their balance sheet, as we call it, are being forced by a regulation that was brought to bear on the market in November of last year called mark-to-market. And at risk of oversimplification, every month, at the end of the month, a bank has to mark its loans to the worst market price available. The banks will admit to you that the models they're using may not be accurate because of this situation. And if you liken a portfolio of loans to a wall of 100 bricks, at the end of each month, 10 bricks of the bank loan balance is disappearing. And on the first of the month, the government brings them a wheelbarrow full of bricks, and say there's 10, and tells them, please lend these bricks out. Well, the banks are not going to lend those bricks. They're going to shore up their balance sheet and put the bricks in their own wall rather than helping you build another wall. So mark-to-market needs to be lifted immediately. It can be done in 5 seconds by the chairman of the SEC, Christopher Cox. The reason it has not is there's different views of this in the administration, and the winners, I'll call them, are of the opinion that you need transparency in order to look at a bank's balance sheet. The argument against that is they really are not sure what they're looking at because market conditions are so poor. So by alleviating that, you may get lending as opposed to just throwing literally trillions of dollars of fiduciary credit, which is checkbook money, into the system, which long range you risk cracking the United States currency. It's a very serious and dangerous situation that's no different than the French pursued in 1790s during the Reign of Terror, and the Germans went through in 1923 when they printed Deutschmarks. You cannot, German marks rather, you cannot turn to the printing press. I've used the analogy that a government's relation with the printing press is like an affair in a marriage. It only ends badly.
Well, David, I think we're going to have to leave it right there. Just one last thing. Confidence? Are you feeling confident that we're approaching this in a decent way, or is it just going to get uglier?
Near term, it'll probably get worse. You need really smart, wise people to become involved in this process. And the public is where you can start. Everything's available on the internet as far as your own research. Benjamin Franklin was asked after the Constitution was signed on whether or not you have a republic or we had a monarchy. And he said, it's a republic if you can keep it. And it's really up to you. It's not up to the central bankers or the elected officials. This is so serious that you as an individual citizen of the United States must push your own education to the limit, go out there and figure out what should be done, and then volunteer your time and brief your members of Congress, because Congress controls the Fed and the other organizations through legislative action.
All right, David Bruhan, thank you very much. We appreciate your time today, sir, and we look forward to hearing from you again.
Thanks so much.
All right, David Bruhan is a portfolio manager at Gregory J. Schwartz & Company, Incorporated, and quite the historian as well. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.